Hello and welcome to the Pints and Penalties Scottish Football Podcast. I'm your host Rory West, and on the podcast tonight I'm joined by Cameron Christie.
Hello.
And Harry Tremaine.
Hello.
So another big week of Scottish Premiership action, and we'll just kind of get stuck right into it. We're going to kick off with the Sunday afternoon game at Easter Road, where it finished Hibs 2, Rangers 2. Goals for Hibs from Dre Wright and Christian Deutsch, and for Rangers from Morelos and Scott Arfield. There's been a lot of sort of aftermath from this game, with some goings on between Rangers and Steven Gerrard, Tavernier, a couple of their players, and Ryan Porteous. Before we get into the game, Christy, I'll let you take this one. Ryan Porteous, see what you want, I guess.
Yeah, I said earlier, it's a shame that I almost can't enjoy him winding up an entire fan base and a football club due to an agenda that I have very clearly set myself, that may never get dropped until he leaves Hibs. So that's it's not ideal for me. It's in between a rock and a hard place almost. But yeah, I personally don't quite see the issues. Like I said before we came on, he's not really done anything wrong as far as I'm aware. It's not like previous, where I think it was on Barisic last year, where he made an absolutely ridiculous tackle. It's not like he's done any of that. From all the footage I've seen, he's not done an awful lot wrong, and it's kind of small time that he's managed to wind up Rangers so much from doing so little.
As for if Rangers are going to take themselves seriously in the sort of challenging for the title, should Gerrard be getting involved in this sort of stuff, or should you just sort of let it slide and focus on the next game? I'm a bit confused as why they're getting so involved in this.
Yeah, but I don't know whether he's using it as some sort of distraction technique, because obviously this hands the initiative back to Celtic. Ultimately, it is 2 points dropped, although I think Hibs were well worth the point, played very well, played on the front foot, but yeah, could be that sort of tactic he's engaging there.
Yeah, I mean, we mentioned it would have been a few weeks ago now, when the whole sort of ball and goalie Celtic games postponed, where there was a chance that Rangers could have been roughly 12 points, I think it was, ahead of Celtic at a certain stage. Now they're only 1 point ahead of Celtic, with Celtic having played a game less. It's still so early in the season, but is this something that should be a concern for Rangers, do you think? Open up to either you guys.
Yeah, not bad. I think this one possibly. I mean, it's two draws. They've still been pretty good. Very rarely look like conceding apart from today. So I'm not entirely sure, because I mean, I don't think Celtic have been massively convincing. Since all that's happened, they look a little shaky defensively. So I'm not sure it's a massive concern, because I think this is the kind of game that the Celtic can also drop points in. So it is one of them where, when you are desperate to get that advantage, and when it's such a big season for you, you do need to be picking up the points here. But I don't think a draw at Easter Road is going to be massively damaging to that, to be honest.
Yeah, no, exactly. It's probably is one of the harder games on the calendar, so can't be too disappointed about this one. I think the Livingston one is a much worse result in the grand scheme of things for Rangers, but yeah, like you said, Christy, I think this is less concerning, and again, it is only the first two goals that they've conceded all season, so.
Yeah, in terms of Hibs, we'd mentioned after their defeat to Aberdeen a few weeks ago, how that was probably their biggest test to date. This is the probably their biggest test of the season, I guess. How do you feel they fared in that test? open up to either of you guys again.
Yeah, well, like I said, I think they were well worth the point. I think defensively, a little bit suspect at times, but then again, I think they're playing against a front line that has gelled very well early in the season and is very difficult to contain. And going forward, I thought they were impressive in the simple aspect of committing a lot of bodies forward. If you look at the first goal, to be fair, Barisic was a little bit exposed in the 1v1 against Boyle, but having four men in the box to aim at is always promising, and Dre Wright is well picked out. I just thought they played, like I said, on the front foot and weren't kind of letting Rangers dictate the game to them, which was a kind of refreshing approach and not something to be sniffed at, because not a lot of teams will do that throughout the course of the season.
Yeah, I guess the in the sense of how Hibs coped defensively is you're probably coming up against the most... maybe not the most potent attack in the league. I know they've not scored the most goals, but I just feel this is the attacking players that Rangers have are so difficult to defend against. And we mentioned Arfield coming in a few weeks ago in the I think was it the Kilmarnock game, and he started this one and again had a decent influence, but. Yeah, I think when you are playing as an attack like this this Rangers team has, you are going to expect to probably have some dangerous moments.
Yeah, and I feel as well that certainly the second Rangers goal comes from one individual switching off in particular. But it is a nice move, but they weren't fully switched on, and it could have been avoided. So I think Hibs. This was a decent performance from Hibs, and I think they are finally starting to click going forward.
It seems as though Hibs went with a sort of... It was definitely the front two pairing of Nisbet and Doidge as they went with last week against St Mirren. It seemed more of a 3-5-2 in this game. How do you feel that that system worked for Hibs?
I think that they definitely needed to match up in the midfield. I think we said the other week that they would just get run over the top of if they went with the two, similar to what happened when they played Aberdeen. Rangers will regularly dominate games in the middle of the park, and with Hibs being relatively light, you can't really get away with that kind of two-man in the middle of the park. It's probably a little bit easier at the minute. Now you're not kind of facing up against some of the sort of the first-choice players in the Rangers team with obviously Ryan Jack and Joe Rebo. But Hibs generally, I thought, fared pretty well. It allowed them to take the game to Rangers and get quite physical with them. Which, as we've already sort of alluded to a little bit, they didn't like one bit at all.
Yeah, in terms of Rangers, as we said, quite a disappointing result for them. They did have a successful result on Thursday night against Lincoln Red Imps, but they're going to go to Willem on Thursday night. Not going to lie, couldn't tell you much about them. Any sort of thoughts on how they'll get on in the Europa League that night?
So I've been an Eredivisie save on Football Manager with Feyenoord recently, and Willem quite often prop up as a difficult opposition. But I would still probably expect Rangers to come through, but it being relatively difficult for them. I don't think, obviously, it's going to be nowhere near as comfortable as what they were with the Red Imps. I watched the first half, and the Red Imps had a right winger who wouldn't look at a place playing some of the amateurs in Scotland. But I think that the Rangers will come through. I mean, last year They definitely beat Feyenoord at home. I can't remember if they beat them away.
It was 2-2, I think they drew away from home.
Ah, right, okay. So, you know, they've come up against probably a better side in the Eredivisie last year. I think Rangers now are probably better than they were at this point last year, so I would still expect them to come through this with a win.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I was going to reference the Feyenoord results from last season as well. And I think as well with Willem, I can't recall them playing in Europe recently. So the other issue for them perhaps is, I don't know what state the Eredivisie is in. Are they back playing?
They've just come back, so I think they've played one game. They're sort of on the same kind of...
Ah, right, okay.
But yeah, well, majority of rest of Europe.
Yeah, because obviously the other issue for them perhaps is, do they have depth to kind of rotate enough for Europe if they're not really regular contenders? So I guess we'll see. But I would expect
two games in, sorry, just going in there on the back of a 4-0 win against Heracles, but they lost 2-0 away to Heerenveen on the opening day of the season.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I'd expect Rangers to come through that, although not the easiest game in the world.
Yeah, for sure. We'll move on to their Glasgow rivals, where Celtic beats Livingston by 3-2 on Saturday. McGregor, Christie and Ayeti getting the goals for Celtic. Holt actually opened the scoring for Livingston, and Serrano getting a late sort of consolation, you could say, for Livingston. Before we kind of touch on the game, I've seen a lot of stick online for Scott Brown. And I guess, Chrissy, you might be the one to go to here, because I don't think you'll be shy on this one. Has he started to negatively affect Celtic in games such as this, to at home to opposition, where you're expected to dominate?
I'd say yes. I think that he slows a lot of the play down, where you've got a lot more dynamism from the players around him, with McGregor, with Ncham, and obviously in front of him with Ryan Christie. And I don't think a lot of time you need a player like him, especially in a home game against bottom six opposition. And it's not only the fact that he slows things down, he is now slower himself as well. As I think we've seen, he's picked up a decent number of yellow cards already this year, and I think it's tackles that 2 years ago where he would have just been able to step in and make, but now he's having to dive in to try and win the ball back, and he's just not quick enough to do it. So I can see why the sticks come, but Neil Lennon seems to be so loyal to Scott Brown, and it's one of them where he's, I think, what is he, 33, 34 now?
I think he's almost, yeah, I think he's around them. I think I'm pretty sure I saw somewhere online, he might be 35.
I think
35 years, yeah.
I can see why, because it's obviously, we've mentioned already with Rangers, it's obviously a massive season for Celtic as well, with a whole 10 looming, which is maybe part of his thinking, why he's being kept in there, because he still is that same leader that he's always been, that same inspirational captain. But, yeah, he just seems a little bit slow, and it comes around every so often. Is it the time to start phasing him out? And at the moment, it looks like it, but he's come back from playing much worse than this. But maybe this is a case of it's one too many sort of comebacks now. He is that bit older again, and he's not going to be able to get to those levels that he sort of reached the Brendan Rodgers first season after a disaster with Ronnie Dyla's last year.
I think a bigger issue is, I mean, you've noted that he slows down the play in possession. I don't think that's as big an issue as off the ball. You can kind of see it in a few instances in this game where he's just kind of a yard off in terms of anticipating where the ball's going to go defensively. And in fact, I think his lack of anticipation is sort of a factor in the Serrano goal, because he sort of steps out thinking the ball's going to come to him, and then leaves Serrano to just run straight at Duffy, who's in a bit of a a no-win situation.
The big thing he'd done before was he was the one who was able to drop in and be almost part of a back three to allow both fullbacks to go forward. And while you're playing a back three, you don't need that player anymore. So it's maybe a case of that. That because you're playing that back three, you don't really need him in midfield for the sort of the protection and to drop in anymore. So you could go with a more sort of attack minded midfield, and like I say, especially in games like this.
Mm.
Yeah, I was gonna agree, because actually if you look at a lot of what Celtic were doing in this game, El Hamid, I thought actually suited the setup quite well as the right sided centre back. Was a lot more comfortable going forward when the opportunity arose to support Frimpong, which also poses the question, where does Julien fit into this defence? Because I don't think he's a natural fit for that role, and I don't think he's going to play the central centre-back as well as Duffy will.
I think Duffy's got the central role. Maybe Julien will come in come back in to play the right hand side instead of Alhamed, but he could possibly go back in on the left if it's believed that Christopher Ayer could be on his way out. So I think Celtic still need defensive options, because they still do lack a number of centre backs. Like we say, they've only now got sort of three natural centre halves at the club. I think the guys like Alhamed are good as part of the back three, but I wouldn't play them as a centre half as part of a back four. So they still definitely need the numbers centre half.
I wouldn't imagine there's many complaints about the Livingston penalty. Would either of you disagree?
Agent Scotland had a complaint because he claimed that it was the Celtic had been denied basically the same penalty earlier before, which they had been denied a penalty, but it wasn't a penalty. So
yeah, that I mean, like, does that just mean that this one isn't a penalty? That's just I don't get that one at all, to be fair.
It's almost as if he's not a real agent and just a Celtic fan.
Is there a hint of offside for before actually we get on the second goal? Callum McGregor, I think he's, I mean, we absolutely slated Callum McGregor on the Scotland sort of review. He might be a bit fortunate with a sort of deflection here, or I'm not sure if I'm being a bit too harsh. But for the second goal, was there a hint of offside for Greg Taylor putting the cross in here? I tried to slow this one down and pause it as many times as I possibly could, and that's still difficult to make it out. But I think it looks pretty tight, to be honest.
I hadn't even thought of it. My biggest bump there with the first two goals is the lack of a press from Livingston, especially as Ayer comes out. I mean, Scott Tiffany has just shown him the way to run 20, 30 yards with the ball, and no one ends up getting anywhere near him. But I hadn't even thought of the offside with Greg Taylor, so it's kind of difficult from the camera angles and things like that to see. But the main thing for me as well was that Celtic got a lot of joy in this game from McGregor drifting out wide left and creating an overload against the Livingston back five, which you know, they used basically two times in the space of 5 minutes to totally turn the game on its head.
Yeah, to answer your question as well, Rory, I think it looked offside to me, because Taylor goes and then there's just that little fraction before McGregor actually plays the pass. I think it might have just been offside, because you see, I think it's Kieran Brown.
That really annoyed me, that.
He goes mental at the assistant straight after the goal. So, yeah, might have been a hint of that. But, yeah, like you said, Christy, I think, again, Celtic were impressive in wide areas, and it wasn't just McGregor, actually. I thought Incham sometimes was drifting out to the right. So they had plenty of options, and Christie as well, you know, just to kind of support in the wide areas.
Brown, that really annoyed me, how he just totally stopped. He could have possibly cut out the cross, but no, he'll just stop and stick his hand up. Poor. Disappointed.
I spotted you. You captained Albion Ejete in your fantasy team, Christy. Another goal for him, which does make him joint top scorer in the top flight this season so far. Quite a nice finish from him. Looks as though he's the part, I guess. If Edward was to leave, he looks like he could fit in nicely as a replacement.
Yeah, it's a fantastic finish. I think McRory, I'm not sure who should come for it, but he does okay to try and shut the angle down, but to sort of, he does brilliantly to sort of bend it round inside the post. We've not seen too much from him, but we obviously stated about his goal record in Switzerland before he signed, and it's clear that he spelt West Ham as an outlier, didn't really get that opportunity, and he's come up here and started scoring sort of different types of goals as well. I've not seen too much of him in the general build up play yet. I'd be interested to see more of that. I don't think I've had a great chance to see him in starting for Celtic since he's joined, so hopefully I think Celtic might be on the TV at the weekend, so if he can start and can get to watch a full 90 minutes.
Well, he technically got an assist for the first goal, didn't he?
I think he would have, yeah.
I think he did lay off to McGregor, actually.
Yeah, so it's one for the numbers.
That sort of finishes, I mean, obviously shows a lot of confidence to take it first time. A lot of strikers are just trying to take it round McCrory, but that's quite an emphatic way to finish. And is that 4-in-4 he's got now?
Yeah, it's four goals he's got, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's turning out to be a very good signing for Celtic, and he seems to fit the role he's been given quite well. So I suppose it just gives them an extra option up front, and they're already blessed with quite a few.
Just to finish off, anything Livingston can take from this? Rooted to the bottom of the table, one win all season, worst or most goals conceded. Any positives at all?
Savano can fucking hit a ball.
Pretty much.
A great strike. I found it odd that Livingston didn't play McCotch in this game. It probably didn't help, obviously, no Julian, but this was one where, if he'd been playing this the kind of striker that could rattle him up a little bit. Which is possibly why Neil Lennon left him out, but that felt a little bit odd that he sort of went with two sort of unrecognised strikers as your front two. But Livingston, I mean, a scoreline, I suppose, getting two goals at Celtic Park, not many teams will do that all season. But to be honest, like I say, I thought that their sort of their press, especially in the lead up to the first two Celtic goals, was miles off it. So there's not, I don't think there's a great deal that I would take from that, and I think that Marvin Bartley looks to be that sort of Marvin Bartley of later on at Hibs again, looks a little bit finished, a little bit slow.
Yeah, I did think that, but yeah, your point about Lukoc, I've got that in my notes as well. I thought like a few times from the highlights that I've seen, they managed to get the ball clear, but then there's no one with that physical presence to try and pick up the loose ball, and well, I mean, from what we've seen of Lukoc so far, that seems to be what he's good at. He's got plenty of energy to get into positions to challenge for loose balls, and actually is involved in the build up to the Serrano goal, so I thought that was a bit weird. Obviously there are two goals, one's a penalty, and to be fair, they're in a decent area for that, but the other one's a brilliant strike from Serrano, so not a lot of positives other than just the surface level scoring two goals at Celtic Park, but need to get points.
Yeah, get the points on the board pronto for Livingston's probably the idea. We'll shift on now to Tannadice, where Dun United managed to pick up a win after A few disappointing results. 2-1 over St Mirren. Goals from Shankland and Sporrell before Conley got one back for St Mirren. I guess just to start off with, it'll be an enormous boost not only for United for getting Shankland back, but having him scoring his first goal in the Premiership. That's just going to do not only himself but the team a massive boost in confidence.
It's a stunner.
I know you can say it's one player, but and he's obviously scored. But even generally going forward in this game, almost because he's there, Dundee United looked so much better than they have almost all season. And he's involved with a lot of it. And I think that playing up there with Nicky Clark actually gets better playing there with him. But yeah, Dundee United really did impress going forward, and probably should have taken a little bit more advantage when they were the man up as well. They had a lot of chances, but not too many, unfortunately for them, fell to Shankland. But the big chance that did fall on me took fantastically well.
Well, there's two really big chances as well at 1-0,
For Nicky Clark.
Where they do make it 2-0, and Shankland and Clark's interplay is really impressive, but also the run that Harks just before the second goal is really really well timed, and I thought he was a positive as well, just getting up to support the front two, and like you said, I think Dundee United looked as dangerous as they have all season going forward, which will be a boost for them, and to win a game against a team that maybe we thought at the start of the season might be a similar level in St Mirren is a big boost, especially after 2-4-0 defeats.
You'd have probably imagined that having sort of Shank when Mellon came in, and a lot of the pre-season stuff would have been based around playing Shankland as your sort of key forward, and having him out the team for this long has probably been a bit difficult to get to grips with. But totally agree with your point there, Haz. I think Ian Harks is probably, without Shankland in the team so far, probably been Dundee United's most impressive player so far this season. And it's a great run for the second goal. I'm a wee bit concerned with what St Mirren are doing defensively there. We've praised St Mirren for their defensive capabilities so far this season, but that was just so easy to have three shots on goal, I think it was, in space of that move, and just barely opposed for any of them.
And ultimately from the highlights package I've seen, I don't know if anyone's seen anything different, but they haven't really created a proper chance in the game. The goal they score ultimately is gifted to them by Reynolds. It just seems to me that they're a little bit too comfortable to not have the ball and not have an impetus to go and win a game. They're just a bit too passive for me.
Yeah, I think they had a couple of chances in the first half through Lee Irwin, who I think this is his first start. Who he's definitely an upgrade as that sort of second striker to Obika. He does that kind of the running Marais would do, but he's much more of a goal threat. And I'm surprised that Ross County actually let him go. But yes, St Mirren quite passive, and it's a little bit annoying because they'd been so strong defensively earlier on in this season. But I don't know, part of it's possibly down to a little bit of lack of faith in the goalkeeper, and it's changed about a little bit recently. Obviously, like I say, with the goalkeeper, they went to three at the back. Shaughnessy was out for a couple of games, but. Yeah, it's so disappointing that that they just aren't able to get a hold of the ball for the second ball, and sorry, for the second goal. And it's McGrath, when he comes out to spoil with the ball, he's basically what criticised Ricky Lally for. We've been 2 weeks ago now, 2-3 weeks ago against Celtic. He's just square, and it makes it so easy for Spall just to take that touch inside of him and get his shot off. Really, really disappointing goal to lose.
Mm. And once you can see that, I mean, when Richard Tate goes and makes a tackle like he does, I mean, that's just, again, someone who seemed to have looked like a decent enough signing for St Mirren, and I mean, making this tackle doesn't automatically make him a bad signing or whatever, but that's just, it's in a, without going cliche, it's a nothing area of the pitch. It's just dumb. I just know, and he's an experienced player as well. I just have no idea what he's thinking, unless it's been a bit of needle.
It just looks like he's completely lost the head there. I mean, there was two challenges that I saw prior to that in the game, which were a bit borderline. Callum Butcher makes one, and then there's a McAllister challenge as well, where the feet are both raised, but then this one is just indisputably a red card. Goes in with 2 feet. Yeah, I mean, no question that that's a red card. And I don't know if he's just annoyed because I don't know who it is who he actually tackles, but they kind of take an over elaborate touch, so I don't know if he's just wound up by that for some reason. Mm. But it's just brainless.
But yeah, you said there obviously about it being a very much in a cliche nothing area, but it's also a 2-on-1, so he'd be, like, I think it's Logan Chalmers, he'd be doing very, very well to get out of that. So it's just, on the whole, it's just absolutely mental to make that tackle. And you know, it's another change that St Mirren will have to make to their back four again. Something that they really don't need at the minute.
Mm. I guess this is by the sort of pattern of the game, the only way that St Mirren were going to get any sort of chance, and it was a Dun United mistake, and it's again another defensive mistake. They made plenty the other week against Kilmarnock that really sort of punished them. I guess less so against Rangers, but it's become a bit of a recurring theme for United's defence. Is that a bit of a concern, especially with the experience that they have in there with someone like Reynolds, who is so easily pushed off the ball for the goal?
I don't steam it. I think it's actually really disappointing from Edwards, who's more interested in wrestling with Irwin and trying to win that ball.
The initial header, is it?
If he allows Irwin to almost take it in and just force him back, there's no need for, you know, Edwards doesn't need to try and win the ball there. But, you know, it's really, really poor. There's nothing, really very little pressure on Mark Reynolds, and all he needs to do is to put that in the stand, and it's gone. But it's a really disappointing goal to lose, and thankfully for Dundee United, from Dundee United's point of view, it's ultimately come to nothing.
Yeah, I feel like he could have probably used his body better, got across and even played it back to his keeper, but he's just kind of desperately trying to get away from his goal. And I just think it's a really basic error to make. They do need to cut those out because they will cost them games.
They're just lucky that they're at this point, they're, like you say, they're 2-0 up and against 10 men. But I think he's probably a little bit too close to the goalkeeper to try and play the ball back to. I think he's probably just got to put that in the stand. But at the same time, possibly the keeper could come out and sort of take care of the situation a little better as well.
Mm. So that win moved Dun United up to sixth in the table, whereas it left St Mirren, that's now five without a win for them. That's going to become a wee bit of a concern for Jim Goodwin's side. There's nothing that I've really seen from the past four games anyway where they've lost that tells me that they're going to turn this around and string a run of wins together.
Yeah, I mean, four straight defeats, but I mean, obviously a couple of difficult games in there, Hibs and Celtic, but this is the sort of game where ultimately, if they're looking to be ambitious this season, they probably would have targeted to pick up at least a point from. It's a bit of a strange situation because at the start of the season it seemed like they'd already found a decent balance, but ever since they've been searching for it again. You're just kind of looking for someone to step up and be the star man. Obika's gone a bit quiet. Nobody's really standing out for St. Mirren at the minute.
Mm. Yeah, they do look a little creatively devoid at times.
Yeah. So we've looked at St. Mirren, we've looked at Livingston. We're going to now move on to the team, or the team that's sandwiched in between them in 11th, Hamilton Accies, who lost to your pleasure, I'd imagine, has 2-1 to Kilmarnock. Kilty and Kabamba getting the goals, and a Dauphin getting the equaliser at the time for Accies. Now they're their top scorer. What have you got to say about Hamilton Accies this week, has anything positive?
I think that it's hard to find something positive to say because a Dauphin, to his credit, is a real, real threat from set pieces. Although, we'll get onto it, but he's helped a lot by some really poor defending from set pieces.
Are you meaning a threat going forward for Hamilton, or a threat when they're defending for their own?
Oh yeah, I mean in both senses for sure. Because as I was about to say, the first goal is just madness. He's completely, again, and I think I used this word last week, in his favour, but he's completely abdicated his defensive responsibility, flown out, taken out Chris Burke, who, by the way, shouldn't have been allowed to run that far with the ball at Hamilton's defence, takes him out, doesn't get the ball, and as a result, Hamilton's nowhere near in a position to help out his teammate, and easy goal for Greg Kelly, who, by the way, I thought had a really good game for Kilmarnock.
Yeah, he's just drawn out to the ball and has allowed Kelly to drift into the space. But at the same time, there's the challenge before on the attempted challenge from Burke. I think it's I'm not too sure who it is. I think it's Hamilton number 7, can't remember who it is. But it's actually an even worse tackle because it's one of those like really lazy ones where he's gone the wrong way and he's kind of just left the leg dangling, almost like he's made an effort.
Well, collar.
Yeah, is that who it is? I didn't catch the name, but I think that's actually worse than what a Dolphin's done, to be honest. But a really good finish from Kilty, and someone who we've obviously said about in previous podcasts where this is a big opportunity for him. You know, Kilmarnock, with the exception of Burke, don't have too many creative players, and he's someone who struggled, obviously, with his fitness and things like that for a couple of years now. Hopefully, a run in the team and some coming up with some big moments like that can see him sort of kickstart his career again.
Yeah, the only problem is I think Will Collar's challenge is a bit lazy, but it's not nearly as costly because a Dauphin's just forgotten that he's got a man to his right and just sees the ball, sees red, and flies out. And Kilty's not going to get many easier goals than that because there's no one around. And I actually feel a little bit sorry for the goalkeeper in that instance because there's not much you can do.
Mm-hmm.
But if you look at a Dauphin in the positive sense, if you want to be positive, he is so difficult to get a hold of at set pieces. He's very powerful in the air. And he does well to kind of improvise and turn this one in. But Nicky Kabamba doesn't even look at him once in this sequence of play. It's terrible.
Yeah.
You kind of question the marking from Hamilton, knowing that a Dauphin is clearly Hamilton's, from Kilmarnock, sorry, you know that a Dauphin's clearly Hamilton's best threat or biggest threat from a set piece. Would you not rather have you know, Kirk Broadfoot or Stuart Finlay, a sort of more agile defender, picking him up?
You would imagine so. Kind of just before we look at the second goal, I was wanting to give Chris Burke a wee bit of credit for the first, because I think that's some great bit of skill from him, and again, proven to be one of Killie's sort of most creative players. But yeah, it's a wee bit confusing. I'm not sure whether you'd maybe look at the goal a few weeks ago and you're still unsure whether this guy is the number one like danger threat for Aki's. But yeah, if you're sort of going by the basis of big man on big man, you would probably assume they'd prefer someone like Stuart Finlay on him.
Just going to point out that that Kimpamba, before the ball has come in, has done very similar to what Devlin for Livingston last week, where he sort of pushes, I think it's Ross Nolan ahead of him, which basically means that he loses a dolphin. So sort of strikes twice with that one.
Aki's have a set piece curse on the opposition teams.
Yeah, does a dolphin have some sort of voodoo that allows his marker to just totally forget about him?
That's what the new sponsor of Hamilton Stadium. You can just picture it now, but it's just he does have that sort of thing about him, a dolphin. He just, as I said, has so sort of unexpected arrivals in the penalty area. But Kamarnik obviously saw red later on through Eamon Brophy. Just kind of open this one up, I guess. So there was the incident last week between Edwards and Morelos. I would say this one's a wee bit more of a, there's much more contact, but if Brophy's being sent off for this one, surely there's got to be some retrospective against Edwards from last week?
I think this is super harsh. I think
they're quite different.
Yeah, if you look at the specifics of this, I don't think that the player in question, who I can't remember who it is, number three, is it McMahon?
That's McMahon, yeah.
Yeah, so I don't think he's particularly endangered, because, and I know this is difficult to kind of assess in real time by the officials, but his foot is not planted at all. The contact is pretty minimal, and I don't think that Brophy's foot is, I don't think his studs are quite raised. It's sort of like a halfway in between a flat foot and raised studs. I think it's quite borderline for me. That's just a yellow card.
The issue that he has is that his legs kind of extend as he makes the contact, and I think that's kind of why he's been sent off. But for me, otherwise, yeah, I think it's probably a foul on a yellow card and move on. Mm. I think that he's a little bit unlucky to be sent off for that, but it's one of them that he's been sent off, and he's, you know, if that goes to appeal, it's not going to get overturned. So there's no point wasting your time and wasting, you know, whatever. I think it's about £1,000 to appeal it. Pointless.
Mm. Yeah. For Killie's winner, I think I just think this is really poor from Fulton in goals. I think the initial save is just, it's really weak. It doesn't seem like he's trying to palm the shot anywhere. I mean, fair enough if you just want to sort of get some contact on it and try and keep out the net, but I just don't see what he's aiming to do. And then the second shot, I think it's from Gary Dicker. That's just like you're almost asking for a rebound to a player coming to score a rebound for you there. Like that, I don't think the Dicker shot's very dangerous at all. You can easily push that out for even a corner if needs be.
I think he's not done particularly well, but there's a couple of issues elsewhere. I mean, I didn't even realise this until just there watching it back, but Will Collar, I believe, is the one who picks it up from his back four, tries to switch the play, gives it straight to Chris Burke, who obviously has the ability to run at a defence and kind of make an action. And then after that, when Dicker does take the shot, there's four Hamilton players that are all standing basically in a little square, and all of them are walking. There's no intensity defensively. No one wants to get out to the shot or even get out to press. I think it's Shibola, is it, that lays it off for him?
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
And yeah, I just think that's that's going to cost you so many goals if you're, again, lacking that much intensity defensively, especially in that side where points are at a premium, and you're just they're just not good enough defensively as it is. They need to... That is a criminal piece of defending. And also, yeah, goalkeeping, not good enough, but he's not been helped at all.
No. I actually think... I'm actually quite disappointed with the initial save from Chris Burke, because the Dolphins just bailed him out there because he's not got any distance on when he's sort of when he's panned out. It's just gone a little bit higher in the air. He needs to push that out further. I've got a little bit of sympathy about the second one because there's a lot of bodies there. Like you said there, there's kind of four bodies. That shot from Dicker shouldn't come through right through the middle of four Hamilton players, and he's possibly been a little bit unsighted with it. But like I said, both saves in the build-up, Brian Fulton has to be pushing that further wide and out of the danger. But, you know, he basically just put it right back down his own throat, and that's how Hamilton have conceded there. And it's really disappointing that Hamilton then playing up against 10 men and offer pretty little in response to try and get that equaliser.
Mm. Yeah, a pretty decent win for Killy, I guess, with the 10 men for a large portion of that game. That does move them up just 2 points off of the top six now. But in terms of Hamilton, I thought it was garbage. I mean, if you're looking off of the SBFL highlights on their YouTube channel, one of Hamilton's chances, we talked about this before we came on, was a shot from the halfway line from David Templeton that actually just, it doesn't even... like look like it's going anywhere near the goal. It's just garbage stuff. And as we said there, the defensively they're all over the shop. I just think they absolutely sucked in this game.
Yeah, I mean it's another one where Brian Rice again. This is gonna sound harsh, but he's coming out and saying really basic stuff. I expected more, especially against 10 men. It's just generic comments that doesn't expand on why your team wasn't good enough to break down 10 men. And yeah, like you said, I just think again they've not created anything really from open play that we've seen. They've still not scored from open play. In many ways it's a miracle they've got 6 points on the board.
Yeah, for sure. We'll move on now. Let's sort of get ourselves out of this rot. But I guess the next game's not going to help some of us too much. We'll move on to Sunday afternoon, where it was finished Aberdeen 0, Motherwell 3. Aberdeen looking to make it seven wins on the bounce in all competitions, but it looked as though it was game over after about 25 minutes. Christy, I'd imagine you've got a lot to say. What went wrong?
I'd correct you on that. It was game over after about 10 minutes.
I was giving them the benefit of the doubt, but I'll take that point.
Yeah, I mean, the game's 3-0, but there's not much to say because after it was 3-0, pretty much nothing happened after 25 minutes. But it just... I think that Motherwell, they... Motherwell were very good to start with. I thought that there was good energy in the team. They pressed Aberdeen relatively well. Without scoring, I thought Watt and Long caused Aberdeen a fair bit of problems. And we'll probably get to a little bit later. But Alan Campbell, the absolute standout player on the pitch, and it led to sort of within the Aberdeen commentary. Billy Dodds, who was doing the co-commentary, asking if he was allowed to give Alan Campbell the man of the match, or did it have to be an Aberdeen player? Which I think says a lot how bad Aberdeen were. But yeah, Alan Campbell was fantastic. But like I said, the goals stem from sort of individual mistakes. The first one, an utterly needless free kick given away by Ash Taylor. And the then obviously that's where Motherwell get the penalty from. No arguments really about the penalty, to be honest.
No, not at all. I think
the ball's going towards goal, so you can't have an argument about that.
Yeah, I think there's been a lot of complaints for that goal towards the Ash Taylor, given the original free kick away, and he's been a, I wouldn't say a scapegoat, but I think it's probably fair enough to give him a wee bit of criticism. I just think he's a player that looks way below the standard required at the minute.
On top of that, I think he's attempted to kind of anticipate very cleverly, probably in his own opinion, the kind of aftermath of the ball there, but it's clearly going into that crowd of players, gets half cleared, and then he's a mile away from his man initially. So, and he's just got an easy header back across goal. So yeah, I think he definitely does deserve criticism for that first goal, Ash Taylor. Also, before we go any further, can I just point out, this Motherwell away kit is a thing of beauty.
It's phenomenal. I think the Motherwell strips the last couple of years, they've just been incredible, to be honest.
I think it was the white away one last season that was just that knocked out of the park. Yeah, top stuff.
Last year they were even better because obviously they were no sponsor. I think that you can have that option this year if you buy it as a replica. Mm. I think that the company are doing it if you pay for the or whatever. You can pay to have no sponsor, and that money goes towards the mental health charity that Motherwell will have on the things on the sleeves of the shirt. So
that's a really good
thing for the club and the sponsor as well to do. But yeah, I was wondering if I was giving sort of a little bit too much credit for the thinking of Gallagher sort of dropping off after the initial ball in, but the fact that it's predicated us slagging off Ash Taylor, then no, brilliant. And then, I mean, that's a bad enough start as it is, and the second goal is just a big individual error from Joe Lewis. I think some people perhaps were comparing it to Kepa's for Chelsea later on in the day. I think Kepa's are actually worse because he's tried to play a pass that was never on. This is just Joe Lewis totally messing up a clearance and a really good finish from Long, who I think I maybe just said that they didn't score. I totally forgot that Long had scored this one. I thought it was O'Hara again, but yeah, a really composed finish from Long, and this is where I thought you gave Aberdeen a little bit too much credit there, but I thought that's where it was pretty much game over.
Aye, well, I didn't actually manage to catch the first half, so I'm just going by the minutes of the goals, to be fair. I didn't want to pain myself to watch it the full game back, so if you watched the full one, I guess it could have looked all over by then. But as I said, it's a great win for Motherwell. That's them, I think it's 4 wins out of 5, and the only defeat in those, in all comps, that is, only defeat coming away to Celtic. Is that them turning a wee bit of a corner, or can you not
was a little bit surprised because obviously both these teams played in Europe prior to this game, but Motherwell were taken to penalties by Coleraine. I thought that it was a little bit odd to see them so chuffed. Obviously great to get through, but to be taken to penalties by a part-time side was a little bit underwhelming for me. But
I know we're 2-0 up.
Yeah, exactly. I think to come to Pittodrie in any circumstances and win 3-0 is fantastic. But like you said, Chrissy, Alan Campbell was great. I think ultimately they were helped by the fact that McCrory wasn't a presence in that midfield for Aberdeen.
Funzo Ojo had an absolute stinker. I mean, we said there about Ash Taylor, but you know, him and Ojo came in to this team and McGinn as well, and all three were hooked at half-time. I think McGinn a little bit harsh. You know, you're asking what is effectively a kind of like an inside forward to play right wing-back. which seems mental. These two guys, they are playing in preferred positions, and they were just hopeless. Really, I mean, both are also culpable in the third goal. Ojo wants way too much time to take the ball down. I think it's Tony Watt that drops in really well. Long beats Taylor to the header, and I mean, I don't know what Lewis is trying to do with the clearance, ends up putting out for a corner, and Beavis McGarvey just out muscles McRory and Joe Lewis. Perhaps should keep it out. It's a fairly powerful header, but he does get hands to it, so you're maybe looking at him to keep it out. But I mean, if the game wasn't over at 10 minutes, it certainly was now. And like I say, I mean, we may as well wrap up speaking about it, because absolutely nothing happened after that.
Yeah, I mean, I just wanted to say as well, I mean, that's probably the first bit of criticism you can level at McCrory there. I think he's been caught ball-watching, really, there, because Mugabe is a threat from set-pieces, and, I mean, he's completely bullied him in that scenario there, powers it in. Also, I would like to say that Polworth deserves a lot of credit, because coming back into this Motherwell team, he's going to be important, and he's going to pick up plenty of assists if he can continue to deliver set pieces of that quality.
There is a sort of elephant in the room, I guess, about the why Aberdeen could have been so poor defensively, and those. The absence of Scott McKenna, who looks as though he's away to sign for Nottingham Forest. The fee, I think, looks roughly around £3 million. That's going to be a massive miss for Aberdeen, in my opinion. He's had a bit of criticism for maybe taking his eye off the ball ever since he put in a transfer request. I think it was almost out of this sort of stage of the season, obviously not the same time of the year, but since the start of the 2020-21 season, I thought he's been pretty decent in the heart of Aberdeen defence. And yeah, I think that's going to be a big miss, but I guess welcomed cash in the bank for Aberdeen.
It's quite worrying. Looking at it, it seems that he's not going to be replaced. It sounds like obviously Holman and McRory were signed for that, but like you say, Holman was played as a sub, so he came on as a sub, and it was probably intended for him not to play in this game, but the fact that Taylor was so bad he had to come on is worrying. And obviously we said McCrory there, who clearly has his best position as a midfielder, so I'm looking at that case that Aberdeen probably need to sign two central defenders to replace McKenna, preferably one right-footed and one left-footed. Is at least Constantine, the only left-sided centre-back left at the club, and we obviously said, you know, Constantine's getting on a bit, and you never know, you know, that's maybe one injury and that could be career over, or he could just have a mid-season just totally fall off a cliff or something like that. In terms of his form, not literally. before we get there, go to that point. But yeah, they desperately need to replace McKenna, and I'd be hugely worried if there's no intention to even bring in somebody for a year long loan and wait till the next year to sort of reinvest that, because obviously the money, that kind of money, with the current financial climate, is really, really important to Aberdeen. But you want to have a good team on the pitch, and without McKenna, there's really not that defensive options there.
Yeah, and this is obviously in the build up to a European tie for Aberdeen. But both sides in action on Thursday. Sporting Lisbon away for Aberdeen. Apoel Beersheva for Motherwell. Two pretty tough ties. I think it's fair to say that we're going to be hopeful to predict any of these two teams making it through past the third qualifying round, you would say.
Well, I don't even know if the games will be going ahead, because Israel have announced quite tight lockdown restrictions, and obviously Sporting Lisbon have so many players in their sort of squad that have been tested positive, so I don't know how many of their games are actually going to be going ahead. But yeah, two massive ties for both clubs, and if either of them are to come through, I think they'd be performing above expected, and it would be a real boost for either team if they were to somehow to come through with victory.
Yeah, I'll be keeping a keen eye on it. I'm obviously hoping for the best for obviously Motherwell as well as Aberdeen. I think they're going to be tough games, but just have a go. It's a one-off.
Yeah, for sure. Let's just hope that Andy Constantine doesn't take up rock climbing or whatever on his trip to Lisbon if the game does go ahead. We'll move on then to the final game that we're going to look at this weekend. St Johnstone 0, Ross County 1. Ian Vigor scoring the only goal of the game. I think ever since we put out the blog praising St Johnstone's performance against St Mirren, they've A, not lined up with a 3-4-3, and B, stunk out the joint in every game. So
I'm going to go a little bit against that, because I think they've still created opportunities, but they just don't have anybody to score them.
I guess. I might just be a wee bit too harsh, and I guess a wee bit too critical on St Johnstone there. I was maybe taking a leaf out of Haz's book earlier on, where he was slating old Callum Davidson before we started recording. But
the thing is that we've seen this happen before with a few teams, and for some reason they're not coming to mind. But I'm pretty sure we had a similar criticism of Park Thistle a couple of seasons ago, where they played nice football but didn't get results. And it's, you know, how far is it going to go? Because ultimately, my criticism would be that, unfortunately, I think Callum Hendry's a good player, but he doesn't really fit the striker role that he's been asked to play here. I think that he likes to be involved in the build-up a lot more, whereas the system is really relying on just someone to be there to apply the finishing touch to some positive moves. I mean, they definitely do play some decent attacking football, but I think they're lacking that little, poacher's instinct up front.
Yeah, I guess that is fair to say. I think one of the issues in this game, I thought Kettlewell set his team up actually pretty well in this game, in the way that he had, I think it's Stewart and Payton kind of occupying the wide areas, which really stifled the involvement of McNamara and Tanzer. I guess something that for me is a bit of an might be an issue for this game is Craig Conway didn't start the game. It was actually Liam Craig instead, and in that game against St Mirren, I thought St Johnstone played so well, and a large part of that was down to Craig Conway and the way he sort of linked the wide areas as and the central areas. I guess you're not looking for a player like him to be able to play 90 minutes every single week, but maybe you'll just, when a player of his quality drops out for, I mean, Liam Craig's done, he's done a decent shift for St Johnstone over the years, but it's someone that's probably just not up to Craig Conway's standard.
Yeah, so it's a bit of a drop off in the output in terms of, creative influence. But I think that, again, it's just something that St Johnstone are lacking. Had the better of this game, and unfortunately, they've come out on the wrong side again.
But I think that also Craig coming in for Conway has also resulted in the change of shape. I think if Conway plays, it's more of a 3-4-3 with probably May occupying that sort of left inside forward role. But bringing in Liam Craig has meant a sort of a reversion to sort of a 3-5-2, 5-3-2, which means obviously they don't take full advantage of attacking down the flanks.
Mm-hmm. I'm just going to say I hate these type of goals that Vigor scored I said it before we record, just seeing it again, I just hate them. Like, I don't know what to say. It's essentially play the clip, ball's crossed in, decent enough cross into the net, there you go. Like, that's it. I have no idea what else to say about that sort of goal, to be honest.
It's not even like one of them that's, you can almost say that he's sort of meant it. I mean, he's put it in an area, but he's just absolutely not meant it. It's just sort of, it's one of those that the keeper can't really do much about because he's expecting a touch. But again, I mean, we spoke about the one for Aberdeen. It's actually a needless free kick that's been given away by Scott Tanzer, because McCart had come across and taken the ball, was going to take the ball anyway. So it's highly avoidable of a free kick to be given away in the first place. But yeah, I hate these goals as well. There's no finesse in it. It's just luck, really.
Mm. I guess.
No, exactly. It's just good fortune for Ross County and misfortune for St. Johnstone.
I guess County were in a position where it was almost any sort of goal, it doesn't matter how it goes in, as long as it goes in, we can get the 3 points, is all that matters for them. They were on a pretty, well, it's not their first win of the season since the second game. It was away to Hamilton, wasn't it? Because they beat Motherwell and Hamilton. So a pretty poor run since then, I guess. Somehow, not won since that second day, as I said, and that win's lifting up to fifth in the table. I guess, as I said, as long as it goes in, get the 3 points, it's the all important thing for County.
Yeah, I think the problem, and like you said, I was critical before recording, St. Johnstone do play, again, is aesthetically pleasing football, but there's no cutting edge to it. They have scored the least amount of goals in the league, and of course have played the full complement of 8 games so far, so that is definitely something that needs to be called out and criticised, especially when you consider that's less than Hamilton, who of course are lacking firepower, less than the bottom club, Livingston, who actually have surprisingly scored 8, and less than St. Mirren. So ultimately, there is just something lacking, and Callum Davidson does need to figure that out quickly, because they could easily find themselves in trouble.
It's not so they're not creating the opportunities. They just at the moment don't seem to have the players to take them, or they're falling to the wrong players. I mean, like the one for Scott Tanzer when he hits it off the bar. I mean, that's one that's just got to be scoring. And then there's one sort of falls to Murray Davis, and that's the kind of ones that you're looking to fall to. The likes of May and Henry, get them. Well, I mean, Stevie May's got his goal this season, but you need him and Henry to start scoring again. And I know neither of them don't think hit double figures last year, but I think it was 8 and 9 goals, and you know that's a fairly good return for them. But at the moment, you're expecting them to have a top scorer at the end of the season who's got no more than 5 or 6 goals, just because they just don't seem to be able to take the opportunities that they are creating.
I guess we can kind of round things off there, guys. An interesting week of action. As always, we'll be back next week, looking at another weekend. Hopefully the clubs that are involved in Europe this week, midweek, can manage to get through. Just have a look on our Twitter account, and we'll probably update in those games as we go. But as always, thanks for listening, and we'll catch you next week.